Well, it's lovely to be here. This is, as Chris said, the second in our series about the very beginning of the universe. So last week, Chris was looking at the very, very beginning, and here we're looking at what happened next. So if you've got a Bible, it's Genesis 1, and interspersed with various bits of things that I'm saying, we're going to be reading from verse 11 to 25. So Chris began last week talking about how light and darkness began, what that's about. So several people have already commented on the fact that I'm wearing a hoodie, which is not me at all. I don't really do hoodies. But if you come and look at it later, you'll see why I'm wearing it. It's not my hoodie at all. It's my son's, as you'd probably realize. And it says on it, you won't be able to read it here, but if you want to come later, and I'll explain it to you. It's Maxwell's equation, all about how light exists, travels, I don't know. But anyway, I mean, apart from the schoolboy error in the formula, it's all about light. Don't really know what about. But I think Chris's main point last week was that it's very easy to get caught up on, oh, was it done in 6 days, or was it done in, you know, over eons? And it's very easy to get caught up in the how and yet actually not think about, that's not really the main point of it. It's that the important thing is the who. Who could possibly bring something out of nothing into reality? Who could possibly create light? Who could possibly put chaos and make it into order and structure? So it's all about the who, not the how at all. But it is worth, I think, going and listening to Chris's sermon online, especially if those are the sort of conversations that you have in your workplace or your social life about the beginning of the world and, you know, what does it all mean, and is Christianity and science, are they opposed? So this week, we've got the next step in the story. Inspired by all those sermons I've sat through where they will have alliterative words, there's 3 points there, you'll need your dictionary to write them, rebellion, restitution, resurrection, that sort of thing. I have been inspired to do the same, so you know where I'm going, this is what you're getting. I would do if it worked. Oh, a bit too far, there we go. Wow, bow, now, I've really dumbed it down. But you will remember it at least, hopefully. So wow, bow, and now. That's really naff, isn't it? But there we go. So, wow. I went to Soul Survivor last summer with our young people, and it was quite interesting hearing Mike Pilibacci, who runs the Soul Survivor organization, talking about how he went to the Grand Canyon. So there's a very little picture of the Grand Canyon. I've never been. And he was telling the story about how he and his assistant had gone to the Grand Canyon. And to be honest, it was a massive journey, hours and hours and hours in the car, you know, 3 days in the car to get there. And he was beginning to think, why am I doing this? You know, it can't be that fantastic, can it? You know, it cannot be worth all this hassle. And even having arrived, you know, you get to the car park and you're nowhere near the actual viewpoint, and you struggle along this very hot road to see the viewpoint. And honestly, he said he almost didn't bother getting out of the car. He was so worn out by having just got there. Having got to the viewing point, being persuaded by the person he was travelling with, he said it was amazing listening to the conversations. Well, it wasn't really a conversation. He said everyone just stood there at the viewing point, and nobody could say anything except, wow, wow, wow. And that was all that was to be heard. People just could not believe that there was something that fantastic on the face of the earth. And that is what we should be feeling about what happens in this creation story. So today we're doing up to day 6, not including the humans. And the Grand Canyon is just a tiny, tiny part of that. Chris mentioned last week about the sort of the way that the Genesis account, it starts with lightness and dark and sky and sea, and then it goes on to sort of fill it. So there's some sort of parallel structure and then filling. And we're looking at the filling today. So, starting in verse 11. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land, sorry, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it, according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. Wow. Variety comes across, doesn't it? It says several times, according to their various kinds. According to their kinds, according to their kinds. There's so much variety. I did try and look up how many plant species there were. Of course, if you look on Google, you get lots of different answers. But they think there's about 400,000 different sorts of plant species, 2,000 of which are edible. They think there are about 100,000 species of tree. They think there are probably 7,500 species just of an apple. And to put that in context, if you ate a new sort of apple every single day, it would take you about 20 years to get through them all. That's just the apples. So it's huge variety. And it's all fruitful. He talks about being able to, everything bears fruit, plants that bear seed, trees that bear seed, fruit that bears seed, so that it can all sustain itself. So he didn't just have to create it once and say, oh, do you have to do it again tomorrow? It just keeps being fruitful. It's amazing how it does it. And those of you who are gardeners, you probably get that pleasure, don't you, of planting seeds and seeing them actually come up. It seems like a miracle every time to me. I've planted some tomato seeds and they've actually come up. They're not looking very bushy, but I've tried. But it is amazing. I find it completely amazing that even with my complete incapacity, really, put them in, I water them, bingo, something usually happens. It's incredible. It's fruitful. There's so much variety. It's reliable, not necessarily my garden, but apple trees produce apples and plum trees produce plums and tomato plants produce tomatoes. And it isn't chaotic. We know what we're getting when we plant things. And that sense of reliability and predictability in the very best sense of the word gives us courage and confidence in God's creation. It's intricate. You know, tiny, tiny seeds that you can't even see to plant, so you have to mix them with sand, so you've got some hope of them spreading out, compared to coconuts and massive seeds. The intricacy is incredible. What can we say except, wow? Verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let there be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. It was wonderful what Chris did earlier with the stars and the peas and the bicycle wheel. We just get an impression, don't we, of immensity that we can't really get our minds around. And that's what comes across there. The vault of the sky, it's huge. It's absolutely huge, this universe that we live in. Immense. Many commentators think it's significant that he talks about the lights of the sky. He doesn't say sun and moon. We know what he means when it's written. But he doesn't say sun and moon. And some people think this is because actually ancient cultures, when this was being written, often worshipped the sun and the moon. So it was the writer's way of saying, they're not gods. The sun and moon aren't gods. They're just mere things that God has created. There's one true God. He doesn't make other gods. He's completely in charge. There's one true God, so great that he can make suns and moons. quite like the way in that passage it says, he also made the stars. It's like a throwaway line, and yet we've got this picture of how many stars there are with that jar of sugar. And it's a throwaway line, and we can't get our minds around that sort of immensity. But the psalmist says, the heavens are telling the glory of God, and they do, don't they? When we look up at the sky at night, we're amazed by it. It's incredible. And again, there's order. It talks about governing the seasons and setting festivals and day and night. And we can live not in chaos, but in order and structure. And it gives us security that God is in charge. And we can know the sun's coming out tomorrow. Well, the sun will come up even if we don't see it. What can we say except wow? And God said, verse 20, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. We've got several jigsaws like this in our household. Not that we're terribly good at them, and we only do them about once a year, don't we? But we've got a jigsaw a bit like this with a sort of jungle scene with lots and lots of animals in. I feel I've missed a trick, actually, on reflection. I should have put a brown cow in, and then you'd have got the how now and the brown cow, but there's no brown cow in there. But what diversity? That's just, I suppose, a jungle scene. But we've got a book with, you know, a polar scene and a jungle scene and a sea scene and with these little jigsaws in. And it's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing, the diversity, the number of species. I think there are 28,000 species of fish. There are 10,400 or so species of bird. I looked up yesterday how many insects there were. It talks about all these things like wild animals, livestock, creatures that move along the ground. It doesn't really even mention necessarily insects. But insects make up about 80% of all the living life on Earth. And, you know, it's almost too many to mention. And they think, you know, there was somewhere between 2 and 30 million different sorts of insects, but so few of them are yet categorized, they can't really put a figure on it. It's incredible, the diversity, the abundance of it. There's a clue in the passage about the supremacy of God as a creator. Many ancient cultures were very scared of these great sea creatures. And yet, in this passage, it says God made the giant creatures of the sea. It's saying it's not as if it was a battle between a great sea creature and, you know, your invented gods. God made them. He's completely in control. And again, there's this sustainability where it says, you know, go and be fruitful, fill the land, reproduce yourselves. There's this great blessing of it all just sustaining itself and a cycle of life. What can we say except wow? So, we've done quite a few wows, but briefly, what do we do about it? I'm sure the purpose of that passage is to make us worship. It's not really for us to count species and measure whales and think about the nitty-gritty of it. Maybe not even to think about the science of it, really, although there's nothing wrong with that. The main response it's supposed to make us have is worship. What sort of God could do that? We're not just admiring creation. Lots of people out there do that. Almost everybody would be amazed at creation. We're admiring the creation and worshipping its creator. God is powerful. He's creative. He's abundant. He's generous. He wants to bless and sustain. It talks of delight in this, doesn't it? It says, and God said it was good. And I expect he wants that response from us too, that we look at that creation and we say, oh, that's good, that's great, that's amazing. We're supposed to take delight in it. Chris was talking last week about how God spoke the world into being, the universe into being. And perhaps it should remind us about how we should be telling the glory of God. When other people talk about how amazing something is, that we also talk about how things are amazing, but point to its creator. The main point of that passage is to make us bow in worship. And what about a practical response? So worship is an emotional and intellectual response, but also there should be something practical that maybe we should take away from that passage. The thing that made me think is about, if God is that enormous, that powerful, that creative, that abundant, that so generous, we can have more faith. Sometimes it's very easy, isn't it, to get so worked up about little things and lose faith in God's ability to do things, change things, heal people, change situations, bring our loved ones to him. We can lose faith so easily, and yet he's incredibly powerful. It says in Ephesians about God doing more, immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. A passage like this maybe could give us faith to pray more, to pray with more faith and more confidence that he can do something about it. And also responsibility for creation. I'm not going to stand here and tell you what I think you should do, but I know there are some people in this congregation that have thought very carefully about the car they drive. All of us, I'm sure, have been much better now about not using plastic bags and reusing the bag, bags going to Sainsbury's. It's a small thing, but it's an important thing. Chris was saying he'd listened to a program this week, or read an article that said, what's the one most important thing that we could all do to help sustain this world? And it was eat less meat, because feeding animals in order to eat them has a huge environmental impact. Maybe we could all eat a bit less meat, decide that we have 1 or 2 days a week when we don't eat meat. I'm not going to tell you what to do, because for you it might be very different to what I need to do. But we should be thinking about how we sustain this wonderful creation. We're going to watch a clip now that many of you will have seen if you watch Planet Earth 2. I don't know how many of you watch Planet Earth 2. I thought it was fantastic. Fantastic photography. It was every week I'd sit there and I'd think, wow, God is so incredible. It's just amazing what he's done, and the Earth that we live on. And that's just the Earth. That's not even talking about the stars and the sun and the universe as a whole. So we're going to watch a clip and then sing the song that we learned at the beginning.